Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm sitting here with Sarah McDewling, and we're across from debut author.
May not have heard of him.
Yeah, Adam Hills. He's written a book called Best Foot Forward. Welcome, debut author Adam Hills.
Pleasure to be here. I'm still getting used to being called an author, but I like it.
You like it? Because I was very lucky to get to see your show the other night, your book tour show. And you did seem to take quite a lot of delight in having the words in a book in your hands. Is it as joyful as it looked?
It is. It's what's amazed me is the reaction of other people around me, like family and friends and people. It's almost like they take me seriously now. They never took me seriously before. Like, oh, you get up on stage, you tell your little jokes, you host your little TV show. Oh, my goodness, you've written a book. You've done exactly what you've always done before, but now you've written it down.
Well, look, you have now have access to Sarah and I. Of course, it's a big thing to write a book
you
and
have access.
We are like priests and priestesses of a book world here, all right?
I think it's just because it's something that's concrete and tangible, and you can put it on your shelf and you can have it forever. And that doesn't happen with everything else.
No, and it's like a get in to this wonderful place free. I mean, you wouldn't be able to get in if you didn't have a book. You wouldn't be in this podcast if you didn't have a book.
Yeah, I'm trying to imagine a scenario where we're like, sorry, Adam Hill, don't come in, and I just can't.
Well, I guess the other thing about books, though, is that, I mean, I've released, you know, CDs and DVDs and videos and the like, but all of those go out of fashion technology-wise. I mean, you know, they're permanent. They still sit on your shelf. But now it's like, I mean, I've got nothing to play a video with, or a DVD for that matter. But books have always been there, and there's no, the technology's come and gone. I mean, I can't imagine families got excited if one of their family members had written an e-book. Mm. Oh, my goodness, you've written an e-book. Can you sign the back of my iPad?
There used to be when the e-books were taking off, there used to be a way that you could do an attempt to sign.
Really?
Yeah, it wasn't successful.
Oh, yeah. Have you ever read, there's a Tom Robbins book, and I can't remember which one it is, but he makes a point at the beginning of the book of saying, I'm writing this on a word processor, on a computer. It's the first book I've ever written on a computer rather than, I think, no, it was a typewriter. It was the first one he used because he writes by hand. He would write a page a day by hand.
Wow.
And he said this, and he actually, you know, the opening of the book is I'm writing this on a typewriter, and he gets increasingly frustrated all the way through. And by the end of it, he just throws the typewriter out because he says you can't put character in it when you're typing. You can't make a really long G. You can't make loops. You can't do squiggles at the side of the page. And he said, no, I don't like it. I need my writing. I need my actual pen on paper.
I love that idea of like your own handwriting being part of your creative process.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure it is. I mean, clearly it didn't happen with this book. But
you didn't write it longhand?
I think when it happens in stand-up, it definitely does, because I write out my act in bullet points, and I'll have like 2 pages of how this bit goes to this bit goes to this bit goes to this bit. And I've tried to do it on my phone or on my computer, and it's not the same. It has to be, you're right, the character comes through when you're writing.
We're talking about old tech. Let's go back to the days when you're sitting in the back of your parents' car listening to old tech. It was tapes, were they? Cassettes of comedians. Some of them not so tasteful anymore, but...
I mean, we weren't to know. You know, I mentioned it in the book, but Bill Cosby had a routine about Spanish Fly, and I didn't know what Spanish Fly was, and it was something, it was an aphrodisiac. You put it into a lady's drink and it makes her attracted to you. But it was, at the time, I've got to say... I guess it was commonly accepted. I don't know. It wasn't like a raunchy routine. It wasn't like, oh, my goodness, he's talking about this. And then he talked about, I specifically remember him talking about when he was at college going to parties and always talking to the ugly girl, because the ugly ones are always the nice ones.
Oh, my God.
Like, you know, my friends would be talking to the pretty girls going, oh, I love Kierkegaard. And it was like... We were kids, we were like 14, thinking this was hilarious.
Can I just sidebar that was a fantastic impersonation?
Well, if anyone ever downloads the audiobook of this, because I've got, you know, mentions of Whoopi Goldberg and Billy Connolly and Ross Noble throughout, whenever I got to it and their conversations, I did their voices.
No.
That's an added bonus. Is that in the description? We need to put that in our description on the book.
Now you have to get the paper book and the audiobook.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's so many. It's been really interesting, actually, the amount of people who've tweeted saying they really enjoyed the audiobook, because I kind of added extras to it. I'd go off on little tangents.
was that like your show? The show was meant to have book reading involved in it, and there's a lot of wandering away from the book. You go, I can tell this better. I'll do this right here. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you don't necessarily write the way you speak, and someone like David Sedaris is a genius, and for me, in the way that he can read from his book but make it feel like a conversation, and also make it really funny when he's reading it out loud. But for me, there's a difference, probably cadence, to doing stand-up and to reading from a book. And there's a couple of those stories that, I mean, to be honest, the reason I started writing this book was that I would tell these stories to my friends or to other stand-up comics, and they would say, you have to put these in a book. So, you know, the stories of meeting Billy Connolly, of being on the road with Ross Noble, all of these were stories I would tell people. So, weirdly, I had to take a story that I've told people, turn it into a book version, but then when I'm back on stage, I just think, oh, I'll just go back to the original version and just tell it to you.
Are you planning to write a fuller version of your trip with Ross Noble? It could be like a new Hunter S. Thompson. But that just the little snippets you got in the book, it's just freaking weird.
I mean, it wouldn't be Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, but it would probably be... I'm trying to work out what two words describe Ross Noble. Surrealism and laughter in South Australia.
Great title.
Great title. Too.
Wow, okay. I was wondering what I was going to do.
Yeah. Well, your publicist in the back, she's just tweeting the publisher right now for another book, right? You're down, it's done.
I don't have any stories left.
I don't think I believe that.
No, right. But your life, what I like about the beginning of the book, is one how relatable it is to me, but
right.
But the Australian experience. So any Australian reading that and talking about summer holidays and the trips in the back of the car, you'll go, that was us. It's wonderful to be reminded of, because you forget and you have someone else write it so well, and you just all your memories start flooding back. That was a lot of fun. But the fact that your mum said you weren't funny, that just killed me.
Do you know what? I even stayed with her last night, and she was going, I mean, I think it was maybe because I'd seen some of your early act, and it wasn't very good. And you said in the book that your early act wasn't very good. No, Mum, that was before I'd even been on stage that you said that. She's really taking it personally, and I'm worried that I may have scarred her now, because it was... I did say to her, I'm going to try stand-up comedy, and she said, but you're not funny. But I'm sure she said it in a loving way.
She was just putting a hurdle in front of you.
Giving you that extra impulse
to sort of go, I'm going to do this.
Oh, absolutely.
Without that desire to prove you wrong, you may not be where you are today.
Undoubtedly. If Mum had said, well, that's a wonderful idea, there's no way I would have done it. I'll go take drugs then. That'll annoy you more.
But what a funny thing is how early this happened. Like, we meet writers, and writers say, when at 12, I always wanted to write a book. Being funny and wanting to be funny in front of your peers, that's early. Like, that's schoolyard stuff.
Yeah.
And it just, you've turned it into this incredible career from that point. Who were you looking at going, like, was it Bill Cosby? Who was it that you were, I'm going to be that person?
Oh my goodness, everybody. Billy Connolly was a bit later, to be honest, but I think Victor Borge was the first comedian that I heard.
I don't know Victor Borge.
Victor Borge was this amazing Danish concert pianist who also did comedy, and he would do incredible musical comedy, in that he would play, I don't know, like Beethoven in the style of Mozart. And if you knew both, it was incredible. But the first routine I heard him do was about phonetic punctuation. And the premise was, and he has this amazing way of speaking, the Danish accent. And he said that, you know, it's great when you're reading a book because you can see full stops and question marks and everything, but that should happen in conversation. You should know when there's a full stop. And so I think he said, I think people should make a noise. A full stop should sound like this. And a question mark is like a swish with one of a full stop. So it goes. No, sorry. That's an exclamation mark. A question mark is. So he then goes through reading a passage from a book with like inverted commas and commas and question marks and semicolons, making all these noises. Should we go outside? He asked. So that was the first comedy routine I heard. But I think as far as people that really influenced me that I wanted to be, Kenny Everett, when the Kenny Everett video show was on, Graham Bond and Artie Jack. I mean, just everyone. I just loved the world of comedy.
Is it how you made it, how you laughed and the way you felt and the people around you laughed? Is that what you were looking at, or was it the way they saw the world?
I think it was probably both. I loved the shared laughter of comedy, and that's kind of what brought our family together. And I think I mentioned that early on in the book, and I really believe that. My happiest times as a kid was when we were in the car listening to comedy and bonding over it. But for some reason, something in my head went, I want to do it. And you're right. I mean, I've talked to John Niven. I don't know if you know the author, John Niven, who wrote Kill Your Friends.
Sounds good, though.
Oh, it's great. It's about his time as a record rep. And was turned into a movie, and he's written a whole bunch of amazing...
Oh, with Nicholas Holt. I know that
yes,
movie.
Yes, yeah. The one with Nicholas Holt. So I played golf with him regularly, and we were, you know, talking about, why did you want to be a comedian? And I went, when did you know you wanted to be an author? And he just said, I just knew. It was just how I expressed myself. And I think his son wants to be an author, and he's trying to talk him out of it. But he's also saying, if it is really in your blood, then you won't be able to stop yourself doing it, if that's how you choose to express yourself. And I think... just from early on, for whatever reason, stand-up just clicked for me.
You talk in the book and on the show the other night about the sort of the changeover to where you started to look at your own life and find funny moments in there, like looking at your parents and using your dad as a butt of a joke or the engine of a joke.
Yeah.
As opposed to sort of trying to come up with stuff. You know, you had material, you just didn't know it.
Yes,
and you've gone on and done that throughout your career. You've sort of your life and everything going on around you. It's kind of and it's one thing that instantly when you pick up the book is how nice you come across, which is not true with Metro behind the scenes. But
oh, I'm horrible,
horrible
human being.
Yeah, but how nice you and there's a wonderful bit with where you lull us into this. Isn't he a decent young man? Isn't he a nice fellow? Then you say something which is just appalling and like. Holy, there's something about the contrast between how you present and the way you lead us into something. And we're going, we're really with this guy. He's a wonderful guy. I'm going to introduce him to my mom for the show. And then bang.
There's terms for that though. In like, it's the setup No,
you're absolutely right. Yeah. You've got to pull the rug away from under people's feet. You can't, you know, a joke is you set up a pattern. And then you ruin it at the last minute.
Yeah.
And you go against people's expectations. So, for example, and there's an amazing comedian in England at the moment called Rosie Jones, and she has cerebral palsy. And she speaks very slowly because of it. And she is hilarious because she explained it to me. She said, because I speak slowly, people get to the punchline before I get there. So then I have to give them... something even more surprising than what they think it's going to be. So that's how, you know, if I was just, you know, saying some of those things in the book all the way through, people would go, what a horrible human being. But when it's smiley, 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 and then harsh, they go, oh, wow, that came out of nowhere.
And is this something that you're, it sounds like to me from the book that you not only love comedy, but you examine comedy. Like, you cut it, break it down, you watch people do it, and you go, how are they doing that? I want to work it out.
Yeah.
And that's your training ground, was being in the clubs, watching other people go up ahead in front of you, or going to see Billy Connolly live and looking at what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm a comedy nerd. And, you know, I noticed when we did Spicks and Specs, for instance, someone like Jimmy Barnes is a music nerd. And he answered so many questions because he knew everything about the bands that had come before him and he'd studied them. And I've been playing disability rugby league the last couple of weeks with a guy called Sean Briscoe who played for England. And he described himself as a rugby nerd. And he, as we were getting on the plane, he went, you know, I could tell you every game that I played and every try that I scored, and I could tell you every game that took place, you know, historically that was of importance. And then I got on the plane, and the only movie I watched from London to Australia was a documentary about the life of Robin Williams. And I went, oh yeah, right, I'm a comedy nerd. I remember being on a flight once, and I was reading a book, and it was a collection of letters between Vincent van Gogh and his brother, Theo.
Amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And there was one letter where Vincent said something like, I've drawn 27 sketches of the same tree just trying to get it right. And I remember thinking, if only there was something in my life that I was that obsessed with. And about 5 minutes later, I thought of a joke, pulled out my notepad and wrote it down. I'm like, oh, there is, it's comedy, hooray.
Is that a requirement? Is that something we can, you know, pass on to people? Yeah, because I mean, my brother was obsessed with basketball, and he would just nail any stat or any And for it seemed like the full history was there. And, you know, I forget that I'm a book nerd and I just pull out this information from nowhere which other people haven't got. Is this something that is required if you're going to become great at what you do? You mentioned Jimmy Barnes, brilliant. Brilliant. You know, Van Gogh, okay. You know, is it something that is required to become that obsessed with the thing you love?
I don't think you have to be a nerd about the area you're in, because sometimes not knowing the rules and not knowing what's come before you gives you a freedom to do your own thing. But I think there was a quote from, and I remember this from my Spicks and Specks days, and I can't remember which a composer it was, hundreds of years ago, but a woman approached him and said, my son has what it takes to be a concert pianist, but he just won't practice. And composer said, if your son had what it took to be a concert pianist, you couldn't stop him practicing.
Mm. Yeah.
That's what it is. It's. I mean, there are days where, yes, you have to force yourself to go to work and you have to force yourself to find the jokes, but there's another great motivational quote that I read, which was, everyone has days where they don't want to get out of bed and go to work. The successful people are the ones that do it anyway. And you push past it and you just know, this is what I want to do and this is how I do it. And some jokes just come to you and you go, oh, that's great. And others you have to work at. And it's the ones that you work at that I think that make you successful.
And what about flexibility? So, you know, you're out there on the stage, you can say what you like to a group of people in front of you, and then you get a TV job where there's kind of the barriers to certain things. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you... Like, there might have been a time in your life when you might have gone, never, not doing that. yes. But later on you went, that sounds great. You know, I can do that. I won't be able to do everything I want to do, but I'm sure I can probably find other things. Is that how you kind of approach that kind of what I'm trying to say, compromise?
Yeah, there is a bit of compromise. I mean, most of the TV jobs that I've done, I've really believed in. Spicks and Specks came along and I thought, this is going to be great. Mm-hmm. I loved the last leg when we started it for the Paralympics, and then when we continued it. I think because of doing stand-up comedy, you're exactly right. Because of having that freedom to do whatever you want on stage with no boss to tell you your time's up or this is what you have to talk about and right, it's time to get off. Because of that, I don't jump at every TV job that I've been offered. And after the last leg, I remember being offered a job by Channel 4. And I said, no, I don't. This isn't the right TV show for me. And the boss of Channel 4 was gobsmacked. And I remember she's always brought it up with me afterwards, that the fact that I knew that it wasn't the right thing for me to do. She said, anybody else would have jumped at that and just said, yes, regardless. But you didn't just take any old thing that was offered to you. I mean, I was offered, you know, in America to be the host of the Guinness World Record Pet Tricks TV show.
Oh, God. Wow.
In retrospect, maybe I should have taken it. But... No, I think because stand-up is my main love and it's what I love doing, you know, if TV fell through, just go back to stand-up and be absolutely fine with that. That's what I love to do.
And writing books.
Mm. And writing books. It's been a whole different experience, but I loved it. I enjoyed... I mean, actually, you're right. This book's a really good example of that because I started writing this in 2003.
Wow.
When I was on tour around the UK and spending time in the States. And... excuse me, any spare moment that I had, I just started writing on the book.
So it's been a long time in the making.
Well, yeah, when I was approached then by the publishers last year, I remember being in Los Angeles, house-sitting and for someone and being invited to a party in Hollywood. And I said no, because I need to work on my book tonight.
Wow, life goals.
Had not been contracted. No one had said they wanted it. I was purely writing it for my own pleasure.
Sorry, Hollywood. Maybe another night.
And I've always, you know, I always regretted that. What's wrong with you? Until February of this year when I sat down to write the rest of the book. Because then I took it to the publishers, or the publishers asked me. Hodder and Stoughton in the UK and Hachette's here said, would you like to write a book? And I said, I've written it. Here it is. It goes from when I started comedy right up until I started TV. And they went, what about after you started TV? And I went, well, no, because everyone's seen that. And they went, what you've done is you've written half a book. You need to write the rest of it. So when I did sit down this year to start writing it, I was very grateful that I didn't go to that party in Hollywood. I thought, Well done. Well done, Adam. 15 years ago, you've made your life a lot easier now.
He knocked off half the book. Now you only have to do the other half.
Adam, thank you so much for coming in. It's been a delight. The book is gorgeous, and you come across really well, except for those bits where you don't. I really recommend everyone grab a copy. And not only anyone who's interested in comedy should really buy two copies, because there's so many little gems on your road to it and how to do it. You know, you can pick up little bits on the way. I mean, you won't be jumping up there being Adam Hills, you'd be yourself, but you've got, there's great pointers in there. It's like a little guidebook as well.
I hope so. I tried to write it for fans mainly, but for comedy fans, and just to explain. I don't know. I think I wanted to explain and show that it's not easy, and that there's a long, slow process. And I am a comedy nerd, so I guess I wanted to explain bits along the way.
Yeah.
So, I'd like to think. I'd like to think it's a textbook. If ever there's a comedy high school, I'd like to think my book becomes a textbook.
Oh, there should be.
Well, Adam Hills' textbook, The Best Foot Forward, is available for booktopia.com.au right now. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.